Welcome to episode number 49, Getting Noticed.
This is the Rotated Views Podcast with Jimmy Lee and the crew, giving you life from various perspectives. Welcome to our level. We hope you enjoy the views.
All right, you are now tuned in to the Rotated Views Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Lee Velez. I'm here with Goose, Heck, yep. Gabe, and special guest, Joey Biscotti.
What's going on?
Joey.
All right, this episode is titled Getting Noticed. In this episode, we have special guest, Joey Biscotti, owner of Dolce Vita Media, a consulting slash business service. In this episode, we discuss branding, promotion, and the various levels of strategy needed to get noticed. We discuss the influence of social media and how to leverage it for marketing campaigns. We break down the marketing industry and the importance of always selling. We wrap the episode up with quotes from Laura Fitton, Simon Sinek, and Seth Godin. Anyway, so we start things off with a definition and a short story. So from dictionary.com, we define the term marketing. The total of activities involved in the transfer of goods from the producer or seller to the consumer or buyer, including advertising, shipping, storing, and selling. All right, so we have special guest Joey Biscotti here with us from Dolce Vita Media LLC.com. So, Joey, let's jump right into it. Give us a brief bio of who you are and what you do.
Well, how's it going? My name is Joey. I'm a father of two and a husband first. I dabble in marketing, promotions, entertainment, you know, second. That's basically consulting services, media, promotion, any of that stuff. Like, you know, that's kind of what I do. Strategy basically sums it all up.
All right, cool. So how did you get into this industry?
It's kind of weird. Like, growing up, honestly, it was kind of easy for my first 6 years. My uncle and both of my uncles, my Uncle Tom and my Uncle Mimo, my aunt and my mother's brother, I mean, my aunt's husband and my mother's brother, they both, like, were kind of like father figures for me. And one was a tailor, one was an auto mechanic, and they kind of showed me, like, the ropes of, like, how they got things done.
Yeah.
And then my Uncle Tom, like, died when I was about six, and that's when everything, I got to see how the other side of the world lives.
Right.
And I inherited a stepfather, and I met my dad for the first time, and so I kind of understood, like, you know, it's easy to learn how to sell and market real fast when, you know, you're kind of dealing with people who you need to sell and market real fast to, who cut you down to size, so you kind of want to know how to get things approved by them, so that's how. So when you have that like, you know, thrown into the equation, it's you kind of learn the ropes really quick. Street smarts with book smarts and how to understanding what people's appeals are.
Wow, it's like a Bronx Tale right there. Street smarts and book smarts. Nice.
That's awesome.
So jumping in naturally, I guess, to the marketing business, what piques your interest most, or what attracted you most to marketing in general?
Well, basically the first part of, you know, the thing was, it, obviously from the first part of what I said, how it started was, it's honestly just keeping people happy.
Yeah.
And like, you know, maybe that's a psychology thing and like that I have to look into more deeply with a therapist, but anyway, outside of that,
yeah.
But, outside of that, music was where it started because that was honestly an outlet for me. So anything like that involves music, arts, you know, things like that. And that's kind of where it started kind of too. I started off writing and, being a ghostwriter for people, writing lyrics, and then it turned into managing and so, like, music was, like, kind of, and, like, art, that art form was kind of, like, where the foundation stood.
So, basically, your company naturally developed itself very, you know, grassroots-ish.
Pretty much, and, like, it just kept evolving into different things and, you know, pulling from different areas all the time.
So, where did the name Dolce Vita Media come from?
That came actually from my father-in-law. My whole thing, what I did beforehand was under, like, two different names, but it was never legit.
Yeah.
So my brother-in-law was trying to start like a nightclub, and he had like some guy who's going to fund it and everything, and it never came into fruition. But while we were in the kitchen talking about different names, he was like, well, what about Dolce Vita? And so, you know, that never was like basically never came to fruition. So like after I think my second burnout of what I do, my wife like was like, well, you got to get more serious. And I was like, you know what? I'm taking the name. So I talked to my father-in-law. I was like, I'm going to use this. And he was like, okay, go for it. So like, and that's where that came from. And like, obviously it means sweet life. And that's what like, you know, we all aim to aspire to. So
nice.
That's pretty cool. All right. So now explain the services Dolce Vita Media provides.
We do everything from, like I said, music promotion. We do event planning, event promotion. We also do, you know, business services, consulting, strategy. While all that's happening, like before anything even gets into, like I have to do my research on the companies, whether like you're a nonprofit, whether you're, you know, wanting to have an event, I want to see where your target audience is. And then from there, I gradually see what your services are and what you need actually, and what your services can, how it can benefit people. Once we agree to, you know, what I plan to do for people and like you, as the owner, and like once we agree, that's when we go forward. But like I'm very, since I've started this, I've been very picky with who I deal with.
Yeah.
It's just because like I don't need a third burnout. So I like what I'm doing, and mm-hmm. I kind of want it to, you know, keep going. So I pick who I deal with very like closely.
All right, cool. So before we get into more marketing stuff, I visited your website, and I know you worked with you know, music artists and politicians. Do you have a favorite or one that stands out, or maybe a company or a brand that you really enjoyed working with?
I have, yeah, there's two that stand out a lot, and that's two things. One's a favorite and one's not. The one that stands out the most, it will always be the Solitary System, a music group that like was before its time.
Yeah,
it was an electronic pop, like pop punk duo that you know, it was two guys who played guitar, and they did all their musical backing with an iPod.
Nice.
Wow.
And that was it was awesome. We had music licensed that was bought by Toyota. It's still being played by Toyota on their car commercials.
Wow.
It's just like it was great, and I love those guys like brothers. They're both doing successful right now, like doing their own thing. One's the CTO of Bark. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
It's basically protecting children on social media.
Oh,
nice.
Wow.
Nice.
The other one, David, he has Space Boy Clothing in Wilmington, Delaware, and he's been on Shark Tank for some of his things. So it's
nice.
Like I just like to surround myself with successful people, and like it just so happens that I don't know that they're gonna be successful before it happens.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's pretty cool. And what was the second one that you didn't?
The second one that I really don't, and it's like probably an area that I'm not going to get involved in again, is politics.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna avoid saying the name of the person.
Yeah.
So I basically like it's. It kind of, like, let's use this as an example. Miguel, you own a barbershop, Riverside Barbershop.
Yep, yep.
Now, how many times during your first starting have people come up to you, friends, quote, unquote, and wanted free services from you?
Yeah, it happens pretty frequent. It happened in the very beginning, yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, after a while, it becomes a burnout. And after a while, it's like you don't want to say no, but you feel like a jerk if you do. But at the same time, you have to provide for yourself. You have to do things.
Absolutely.
So, like, I mean, after you have kids and you have a family, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So, like, so at the same time, this politician decided to, like, kind of burn. Kind of, like, say, okay, well, I did you a favor. I got you notoriety. Like, and I'm like, okay, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. So... And that's where the second burnout happened, where I was like, I'll never let that happen again.
Yeah.
So that's why I, you know, I basically, that was actually part of the inspiration of Dolce Vita Media. Like, not like, you know, not, I have to start charging for things, and I have to basically say, you know, that's it. So in a way, like, it was kind of an inspiration, but at the same time, it's memorable because I'm not letting that happen again.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. Yeah, exactly. Live and learn, especially with small businesses or a consulting business. I myself done several coaching sessions with people, and kind of like the same thing happened where, you know, they threw the whole like, well, this is your first, you know, go at, you know, being consulting, just use me as a, you know, as a model. And I did at first, and then I just the emails continued. They still want to set up phone calls. I'm like, this is, it was becoming, it's like, unless I'm getting paid for this, now it's to a level. I took you to a level that was free of charge, that I felt that was, you know, this person progressed, they moved forward, they're hitting goals, everything was going good for them. And, you know, and I was still getting this stuff, the contact, and I said, all right, this got to stop, or something else got to change, because I was trying to avoid what Joe is talking about here, the burnout thing. And then, you know, the person, same thing, the person made me feel bad, or was trying to make me feel bad.
Push it off
for
in your full services.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, it's. I feel like it's like if you hit the lottery for like $1 billion, you know these people are going to come around, I'm your third cousin, sure. Blah, blah, blah. They want, everyone wants, people
everybody
always
comes
want,
out,
everyone,
comes
everyone
out
wants work. A free handout always. So sure, it's like you'll get that, whether you're in a small business, a small service, anything, people are going to be like, oh, well, you can try it on me, or do this. Oh, you're just starting off. You're not making that much money. I'll give you half the price. Like,
yeah.
There's always people always trying to get those cuts.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. So switching gears. Now we're just going to open it up for everyone here. And then Joey, you chime in with your expertise here. The first awesome. Question for everyone is, do you feel like we as people are always selling? So there's a book, it said, it was titled, it was the most fascinating title I think I've ever seen. It says, Jesus was the greatest salesman, or something like that.
Huh.
So, and then they start breaking down Bible verses on how he got his 12 disciples, and you're just like, wow, that it was like genius, like what he did and how he did it. And I do believe we're always selling. We're always selling the idea of us,
absolutely.
Of who we are. Not only even selling other people, a lot of times we're selling ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I can do this. I know I'm the man, or I can afford this. So I'm going to dress like this, and I need to impress, because when I dress up, I feel better. Yeah. I act different. My chest is a little more poked out.
You fake it till you make it.
Yeah, exactly. So you have that thing. So I don't, even when you're dating, you're selling yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's like you're selling yourself to your significant other, and you're always trying to like,
you gotta put the best foot forward.
Heck does it. He's like, yeah, I'll give you the stars and the moon. Yeah. He says stuff like that.
15 kids later.
Now my trick was always, let's go to Great Adventure. We'll have a great adventure.
Those roller coasters.
Yeah, we go upside down and upside down.
Ridiculous.
Wow.
Oh, man.
That's
it.
Wow.
That was my selling point.
That's funny.
It worked for a little bit.
I mean, even us, When I first met, I'm just trying to think, like when I first met my wife's family, like her parents, it was weird actually, because I met her entire family in one shot.
Oh, wow.
We were on our
That's
way home.
So intense.
Yeah, we were on our way home from the shore. She had a shore house with her girlfriends or whatever. So we're driving home. It's like a Sunday afternoon or whatever. And she gets a text or a call, whatever, from her mom. She's like, oh, you're in Jersey. You stop by Uncle Jeff. Now, her Uncle Jeff lives in Jersey. They just got a house or something like that.
Home.
So it was on the way home. And she's like, are you guys all there? She's like, yeah, everyone's here. She's like, oh, all right, I'll see if he wants to stop. And what am I going to say? No, because now I look like I'm like, oh, man. So here I am in like a Ninja Turtles t-shirt. All right. And like
the
short,
shirt fits
like,
him like a shell. It's
and
all
board
tight.
Shorts.
Don't knock the Ninja Turtles t-shirt. That's what I proposed to my wife in.
Yeah. There we go.
Wow. Check that out. Well, it was like, I think it was more that it was like a bum shirt for me. It wasn't that it was Ninja Turtles. It was like one I just threw on, got in a car, and we're just driving.
Thinking you're going home.
Yeah, I was just like comfortable. And so I walk in, and it was like a birthday party or something. So everyone's like all kind of dressed, not dressed up, but like.
At least dressed seasonally.
Better than a Ninja Turtle t-shirt.
Well, that,
So I met her mom, her dad, her brother, her grandma, her uncles. I'm like, oh my, all one shot, dude.
Wow.
That got all out of the way at first.
Oh, yeah, and I was just,
your impression was like.
They accepted you in a t-shirt and board shorts, you were already in. That's it.
I mean, you ever like smile for so long, and even if, whether it's forced or not, where your mouth actually just starts to hurt. Yeah. I got to that point and like 45 minutes in, I'm like, I'm dying here. Like, somebody save me. And it was like her dad like pulled me aside. He's like, oh, yeah. So how's things going? How was the drive? And it was like, it was a chill like experience. But the first, you know, it's an overwhelming thing when you think about it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I kept trying to like, you know, compensate for my underdressed look. Yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, well, now I got a solid
job. That's just
job.
The way we are, though. Weird. We're all about like our clothes and our image and stuff. So other people wouldn't even care.
No, I mean, when you guys go into interviews, right? You're selling yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're telling them how great belts. You are. Interviews are very weird.
Didn't hear me? Joe, wear the white belts for the interview.
Yeah, the white belt affair. Every interview, I wear a white belt.
Is that true?
Yeah.
What's the significance behind that?
I have no clue, but I feel like the white Power Ranger. It's weird.
We didn't say nothing the first couple of times, and I'm like, oh, no, he's really wearing his white belt. So then he's like, it's a white belt affair. I'm like, all right, so white belt affair it is.
That's awesome.
That's hysterical. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like at all times we are. It's not a negative thing or a bad thing.
No.
Well, let's take it back a little though. Like, think about like, you know, for instance, your son when he's about to enter. I don't know if he's in school. He's just started school or he's about to.
Yeah, he's in school. Yeah.
That first notch when he goes in there, like he's got to like. There's that desire to be accepted. There's that desire, like. So like, you know, even with Angelina when she started, like, you know. Now, Hector knows she's, like, very, like, kind of shy and everything, but, like, when she's around her friends, like, you see, like, it's almost, like, happiness to, like, see how, like, you know, she's accepted and stuff like that, but, like, at some point, whatever it was, the natural ability, like, children are selling themselves all the time to, you know, to their friends to get that desire for acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, it starts that, you know.
Yeah,
it
starts
young,
that young. All right, cool. So... All right, Joe, this one's for you, Joe. All
right.
So as a consultant / business service, I assume your company places huge value on social media. From my understanding, I heard you gave up Facebook for Lent. Can you explain a little further?
Well, I gave up my personal Facebook for Lent. I didn't give up my concerns with the business, though, even though I'm kind of like, you know, just watching, like, you know, what I post right now.
Oh, gotcha.
But just like the personal Facebook is just like, I'm very passionate about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I kind of catch myself being like a keyboard warrior at times.
Yeah.
Like when it like about certain things. And I was just like, you know what? This is a healthy thing to give up for Lent. This is like something easy to do. Well, not really easy, but like something that like, you know, might actually be healthy in a way that I don't have to worry about it till Easter.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what, I could do without the drama, I can do without all the stuff like that, and so, but on the business end of it, like, I have the Pages app, so I don't have to worry about seeing people's timelines or news feeds or any current events or anything like that.
True.
Nice.
So, like, I feel like, you know, and plus I have Instagram, and I don't gotta worry about, like, any dramatic pictures on that, because my circle of friends on Instagram is pretty tight, and I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
The company Instagram, I don't really pay attention to the news feed too much, but, I feel like, you know, like, it's not really... Facebook, I think, was... The giving it up for Lent was more of a personal, and it was more of, like, something that I felt could be healthy, but it wasn't for the business point part of it, though.
I got you. That's, that even still, man, that is brutal. I think it's interesting, and there's something to be said about social media, how it has become such a huge part of our lives,
routine,
whether it's a positive or negative, or whether it's just a neutral thing.
Daily routine.
It's just now. Yeah. It's like, you know, back in the day, I guess in the '50s, these guys were running down their driveways, couldn't wait to get that newspaper.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that similar thing. We just kind of want to see what's going on. You know what I mean? And we have everything at our fingertips. You have the weather there.
Yep.
You know exactly what it's going to be for the next 450 days.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And then, like you said, you have that. I have like a Yahoo feed that just gives like bullet points of, you know, news, because I, you know, I'm not really, you know, big news guy, but if I could just get like the current, the top five things, just kind of stay in the loop and not be inundated, I'm happy with. Look at the weather. I check out both my Facebook feeds, my Instagram feed, and I'm just like flying through it, saying, oh, okay, cool. I might might post something, I might not, and then boom, I'm done. And then I check it out at lunch, and then when I'm back at home.
But it's like you said, you don't have to worry about dealing with the daily drama.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That's why I feel like it is nowadays. Social media.
You get inundated with all the nonsense.
A lot of negative or just like senseless stuff.
Best is when you read like a battle between people that are like putting their business out there. Why?
Senseless.
Because
they're the opposite of what this topic is, getting noticed. And maybe they do want to get noticed.
That's true.
Maybe they do want to brand themselves as a controversial voice mouthpiece.
I've done that I've actually deleted people on my account for that reason. Just so I didn't have to see it anymore. It's ridiculous.
I don't even have a Facebook.
There you go.
Joe, do you do that on purpose? Is that like your branding of yourself? Do you put out controversial stuff just to see what people say? Because you said you were a keyboard warrior.
The chuckle.
When I used to a lot, and like actually just to get people's reactions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But because like for instance, like how I said in the beginning, when I was young and stuff like that, like I had a stepfather who was pretty much like he was, like I said, when you're dealing with someone who has like a lot of substance abuse, you never really know like which personality you're dealing with.
Yeah.
So like, and it was always cool to practice the reactions I get from him.
Yeah.
Because it was like okay, which one am I dealing with now? Like what? So, but I used to just do that on Facebook. Like, all right, let me just put something very controversial. Like, I actually had a dummy account set up just so I could do that.
So you get a thrill out of it.
So, but it was kind of a cool experiment. And then, like after a while, like this whole election thing happened for the presidential, and then you see the ugly side of people.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'm like, wow, like maybe this wasn't a good idea, because like now you're part of the enablement. Now you're part of like the problem.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? And that was part of like, you know, I was like, it's time to go. It's time to like, this is Easter's a good idea right now. So.
Yeah.
So there's a statement by Jay Baer. He says, social media allows big companies to act small again. Joe, is there anything you can say about that quote? I found it fascinating. I thought I would get your opinion on it.
I like it. I agree with it. Allows big companies to start engaging again. And so, like, for instance, I'm a huge fan of the Wendy's Twitter.
Yes.
That's the first thing I have to start
with. Hysterical, yeah. I knew you were going to say that, and I was like, I'll let him go. He'll nail it.
So I love that. I think the other there's this one guy who pretended to be the guy for the customer service from Target. He's not even has nothing to do with Target, but the fact that he would answer their like any customer service related problems on Facebook was hilarious to me. He wasn't getting paid for it, nothing, but like that's the kind of thing. But then like seeing Target's response, well he's right. But
great.
Oh, that's too good.
Like I that kind of stuff, like yeah, like I do agree with that. Like it allows you to have that connection. Social media does help like big companies like relate to customers. I remember even the New Jersey Electric PSE&G, like for the longest time, like people were just furious with them.
Yeah.
And people just call them out on Facebook, and like you don't know how many times they were like, oh, please contact us. Like I know three people who had their bills lowered by a couple hundred dollars because they complained about them on Facebook.
Wow.
So like, hey.
Yeah.
It works.
I mean, that even goes beyond, you know, even like the bigger companies, even celebrities are more accessible now.
Yeah,
but definitely. I feel like the opposite is true. I feel that with social media, a small business or a single person can be a big business or a bigger person than what they are.
Can definitely work.
Just because you have an audience now that you never had before.
Big range of people. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I feel like it's the benefit is, you know, mutual, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the, you know, it goes back and forth. You know, the levels or the extent people take it to, that's a whole nother thing. But, you know, anyway. Anyway, so moving right along, Joe. What is your take with these guys who sell their marketing plans on Instagram? Like gaining followers or, you know, what's that? Because at first, I remember when we were first on Instagram, you saw the couple things. I even tried one of the guys, what's it called? And it wasn't even a real marketing plan. It was just like he would send you fake followers. I'm like, I thought you meant you're going to show me how to get followers, not literally give me fake followers.
Yeah.
Luckily, I paid like 10 or 20 bucks for it, but I'm always testing stuff, so that doesn't bother me. But it was fascinating. This guy gave me fake followers, and then Instagram deleted them all anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah,
but
they cleared out those bots. Yeah,
they cleared out all those bots or whatever, which I didn't even know that's what that was.
Yeah,
I had no idea what it was going accounts. On. So Joe, what's your take on that?
I LOL at those people. Yeah, like gladly. Hashtag LOL. But I'm all about organic. Like, if you're gonna have something, just be organic about it. Like, there was a one group I worked with before I actually, you know, signed them on as a client. Like, after the fact, because like I saw they had all these followers and everything, I was like, okay, there's something to this, because they're not really that great, but
yeah,
all right, give them a shot. And so turns out they're like, yeah, we bought all these followers and stuff. And I was like, I had to ask the question, because after I would do live tweeting or anything like that, I'm like, okay, there's always the same 10 people who like live tweet anything that they say. They always respond. And I'm like, okay, they have like, you know, a couple million followers and only 10 people are like something's not right here. So I asked the one guy, I was like, so what happened? He was like, oh, we just bought all these followers. With like some of them, like, I guess, like, and then when I like went down the followers of who they were, like, Blink-182 fan one, and I go there and like they have like two followers and like they're following 750 people, and I'm like you know, they're bots, and I'm like, this is nuts, and it wasn't making anything for them. So like, at the same time, if you want to have followers, you want to have fake followers, it's kind of like having fake friends. I mean, it's kind of like sending yourself flowers.
Absolutely. But,
like, I mean, hey, if that's what helps you, then, you know, maybe it helps you emotionally, but I'm not really a big fan of it.
So jumping from that, how has, do you believe, social media helped the marketing industry?
Well, it gives people, like, again, the organicness of it gives people another outlet to say what they feel. It gives people another outlet to show their product. It helped my friend from Spaceboy get his stuff noticed and get on Shark Tank. It, you know, it helped my friend BJ, you know, be in the TechCrunch finalist for his product Bark. So, like, you know, things like that, you know, it really, I think it's helped people who have, like, you know, cool ideas get noticed. I mean, I could probably do without the cat videos, but hey.
there's a bunch of people. I remember there's a guy named, I think he's still out there, but this was, like, dude, at least 10 years ago, a guy named Timothy De La Ghetto, and it was a YouTuber who does, like, all these, like, little comedy skits or whatever. It got really funny, and then it just got like over the top, just kind of silly. But these guys, it gave them a platform. Yeah. They're showcase, and the reason why I say that is because they're comedians that would have never seen these guys ever. Now that social media, because I think YouTube's now considered social media at this point. I don't know. You have a profile, you can upload stuff, people, you know, communicate with you. That's a form of social media to me. But anyway, so Justin Bieber got noticed that way. Yeah. I think Taylor Swift got noticed that way. I don't know, but there's a bunch of people who got noticed from YouTube that if it wasn't for that outlet, they would have maybe never gotten noticed.
Yeah, with social media, you're connecting with people you would never, ever, like, on a daily basis connect with. You would never walk down the street. You're not going to see, all these people or mainstream, like, producers or whatever. Hawking it. They're on there. They're hawking what's going on.
Sure.
But on a one-on-one, you'll never run into them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the internet in general.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, I got a yearly report from my website, and, you know, I had readers from, like, 158 countries or something like that. And I'm laughing in the back of my mind, like, 158 countries. How wild is that when you think about that? I mean, that's probably nothing to a lot of people, but
you definitely had no clue.
Yeah, and I had no clue. Because they track it by, you know, where these people are coming in, logging in on from, you know, the internet.
The IP addresses.
Yeah. So I had, you know, people from, like, the Netherlands. And it just, like, it blew my mind. I'm like, if I had, let's just say, a paper product, like a little, like a newsletter or something like that I distributed locally.
Yeah.
Guy from the Netherlands would have never read that. Yet, but because of the internet, he had access to a free website. Well, I don't know if they pay over there. I know our internet. I know it's different in different countries, but anyway, I just thought that was fascinating with the, you know, with branding yourself was having my own website and plastering my name all over the website and making it this whole, you know, unique thing. And it goes back to that you can make yourself appear bigger than what you actually are.
Yeah, and it,
not even purposely. It just looks that way. Cause,
it's funny because, like, all I have is an Instagram, and I post pictures, I post stuff, whatever. And, like, I'll get tops, like, 100 likes. But, yo, when I'll be at the shop, and, like, dude, there's more people saying, oh, yeah, I saw that picture, or that was good. And I'm looking down, I never saw them like it at all. Yeah. So there's more people viewing stuff than what they're actually liking.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's actually being distributed like further than what you actually think. So
yeah,
Miguel, like, they're called stalkers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Dude, but it's funny because I'll get like, oh, yeah, I want that same haircut you did on what's called. I'm like, I didn't even know you had Instagram because you seen it. You're talking about a picture that's on Instagram, but right. I didn't even know they even had access. They saw me or they're
your
friends
only,
with me.
That's your only
yeah, that's my only outlet like out to the world right now, but... So yeah.
Meanwhile, they were waiting in the freezer, waiting for you to come around.
Crazy,
the bend
yeah, yeah, exactly. So crazy.
So I know we kind of talked about this. So that kind of speaks on social media impacting individual promotion and reaching their audience. Joe, how have you utilized social media for your company? And you could also, I guess, speak on hashtagging.
All right, so. I basically, the company kind of like, people who know me know, like, you know, what I've done for years, so I kind of banked on that a little bit. I started, like, started with the website, then I got the Facebook going, and it's weird how one event, the Facebook page went from, like, 1,000 to, like, 5,000, and then from 5,000 it shot up to 10,000 people liking it.
Wow.
I don't even know where half of these people came from. Yeah. And I'm just like, it's kind of weird, but from someone who's from a social media perspective, like, it's kind of, I feel weird saying that I have no clue where they came from.
right.
But, it's just like, but at the same time, even like, the Instagram followers, like, okay, like all I did was post one picture of Stevie B and it skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And like, but you know, it's kind of, hashtags I think help that in a way because you know people I never done it until like you know I started doing this more thoroughly but I never researched like a hashtag but apparently people do
yeah
you know and you know that's where a lot of my other likes are coming from like in my some of my followers so it helps but unless it's a catchy hashtag I don't approve of you just don't if it's not catchy just don't do it.
So can you, for the people who don't know the benefit of hashtagging or even what it is, because some people are like, well, why do you hashtag all this stuff? Can you explain hashtags a little bit?
All right. So, like, let's say you have an event coming up, the birth of Hector's fifth child. So,
15.
Like, we'll just say hashtag Hector the fifth. And right. Everyone who basically knows Hector, will want to find out more and see pictures of this wonderful birth that hasn't happened. Sorry, I'm wishing you this, but no.
Seriously.
But you know, like, therefore, so we'll, you know, the people will go research that and like they'll start liking just from that. It's a good directory outlet more than anything.
Yeah.
So, if anyone wants to see, you know, like, for instance, when George Bush was in office, hashtag Bushism. Yeah. And so you'll see like funny quotes of everything he said that was funny, like, and it's a cool directory of where all that stuff will be.
Yeah.
You like food? That's just search for that hashtag. You'll see all different recipes and probably a bunch of links to Pinterest.
Yeah. So, exactly.
I mean, it's more of a directory, but I mean, it's good marketing if you know how to use it well.
Very well said. Yeah. All right. So, switching up gears again. With Dolce Vita Media, what is your biggest challenge that you have to overcome? Or, you know, I know this for a lot of startups or small businesses, there's a crap load. But if you could just pinpoint at least one, you would think, or something maybe you're going to work on this year. Or,
well, one of my biggest obstacles, honestly, is trying to explain to any potential client what social media actually is.
Yeah.
And what it does and why it's important and, you know, for those who don't use it. I think part of the issue is when you have a person who doesn't understand why they need it or why it could help them, I think that's when you know, maybe there could be some other type of marketing ambulance chasers that they would be well for. But I think the other part of the thing is having clients who want to invest in it. If they're not looking to, for instance, it goes back to what I said earlier. If you're not looking to pay the contractor what it is after I do the research and prove to you like what needs to be done, if you're not willing to invest up front, then I don't think we can work together. Because it's not that I want the money, because my if anything, my services are probably the cheapest than any other marketing service there is.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to keep it real. But the thing is that if you're not going to invest anything up front, then I don't think I can work with you, because the fact of the matter is that now you have nothing invested in it. You basically aren't looking to – you're not looking to help yourself either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, unless you want to help yourself, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you help yourself and help your business grow. And unless you're willing to do that, like, you know, if – for instance, now, if I were to say, like, I'm going to help Rotated Views and stuff like that, you're obviously invested in your company. You're the perfect person I want, because you know what it takes. You know what you where you want to go. But if I went to Joe's, you know, pizza place down the street, and he doesn't have time to, like, you know, put any ads out, or he doesn't want to tell me what he wants to put on his, as a specials for the week, then you're not the person who wants to succeed. You're just doing it because you think it's a quick option because you're a poor businessman.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Makes sense.
So in your opinion, is marketing helping, or is it selling, or is it both?
It's a little bit of both, because, like, I mean, you obviously want to sell whatever you're marketing. You obviously, like, you know, if you, whether it's your own personal stardom, whether it's your own, like, you know, your services, whether it's Miguel's Barbershop, whether Riverside Barbershop in Bristol, or whatever it is, like, you definitely want to, like, make sure, like, you're talking about it. Obviously, you're going to need some compensation from it too. So it's a little bit of both. Whether you just want to say, look, hey, this is who we are, or hey, either way, people are going to want name recognition.
Yeah, for sure. In your professional opinion, Joe, do some people just have the ability to sell anything? And is there such thing as over-marketing?
It's kind of... That's a twofold question. That's like, some people do have the ability to sell anything, and yeah. And those people primarily lived probably around the 60s and 70s when they were, like, door-to-door salesmen.
Yeah, yeah, they're selling, like, dictionaries, or yeah. Not dictionaries, encyclopedias.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, my parents bought a couple of those. So, yeah. But, you know, even vacuums, like,
like Kirby.
Kirby.
What was the one, the Electrolux? Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah, so, you know, those people, and it's kind of weird, we still get some for solar panels in my neighborhood now, but they're not as good as what I remember who used to come to the door back, like, when I was younger.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as, I think there are, like I said, there are people who can probably sell anything, but after a while, you do saturate everything, and it does become over-marketing, and now you've reached the point where it's just annoying.
Yeah.
So, like, there's commercials I see on TV, there's radio ads on, like, that I hear, and I'm just like, okay, I'm changing it. It's done.
Yeah, but, like, I have Pandora, and I promise you, there's times I just want to chuck my phone across everything. Yeah. I'm like, is this the only ad you guys bought, or yeah. Bought you guys out? Because it has to be the most obnoxious. Hearing his voice drives me up a wall.
Yeah.
It's actually, like, it's one weird game I play, and, like, it comes on an ad during the commercial for that. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm playing a game. I don't want this
one. Yeah. All right, so another quote, I guess, on overselling. Never let ads write checks your website can't cash. Do you have anything to say on that?
It's true. I agree with it. That's why I don't try to put too many ads out there, because, like, you know, you don't want to guarantee something, and, like, everything's open for interpretation. So basically, like, you got to be careful what you advertise, because you don't want to, again, oversell.
Yeah, and I feel like there's nothing worse where you're on a website with, like, let's just give, for example, it's like a bodybuilding website or something like that, and their ads have nothing to do with fitness or something. Yep. That always drove to me. No, it just seems like it's careless. They're money hungry. They don't even whatever. Yep. I don't know. It's just like you're not paying attention. You just want an extra whatever that generated $100 a month, and that's fine and everything. But I don't know. I just felt like that's not a service to the people, because I'm at your website and you're throwing ads at me that have which I don't mind the ads. I get it. That helps. That's revenue. Yeah. But when it has nothing to do with, I don't know, for some reason,
the content
it just,
you're there for.
Yeah, it just drives me nuts.
Or like it takes 10 minutes to load a website because it's like 900 ads all over the...
Exactly. and how does one market, to their niche without being too much? So is there like a line that you draw? So your business and consulting service, is there a line... Maybe whether obviously it's invisible that it's too much marketing or not enough. And how do you know? How do you gauge that?
Well, that's, I just had a client not too long ago that, you know, basically they had an event that they were trying to promote, and they kind of had, they're being saturated as well. And their event was foreshadowed by people who knew that they were holding an event. It was for a benefit for autism and so forth.
Yeah.
And these two like people that they didn't, I guess they didn't get along with, one threw a free event in another town not too far away, and the other one threw another event the same day, all on the same day.
And it was
like how vindictive is that?
Right.
And so I was like, well, here's what you have to do. I was like, go to Facebook, go to the ad manager, and I was like, here's what I want you to do. And I gave them the parameters of how to tailor their ads. I told them, I want in a 10-mile radius of everything, of all the ads that are happening, all the events that are happening in those towns. I was like, and I want the people who like that, who say that they're going, I want all targeted.
Yeah.
So sure enough, that their event happened that day, and they actually got more people than they thought they would because of those two events. Wow. The event that was holding the free event actually tanked. And when all the people who came to that event actually said, yeah, I saw your ad on Facebook, it seemed more reasonable and so forth. So they were like very happy, but at the same time, like that's the kind of fuel that I look for. Like, you know, like if you're willing to do it and this is what you're willing to do and you're willing to listen, like, and I kind of got inspired because I thought that was vindictive to begin with, the whole two events on the same day, especially when you're finding a good cause like autism or something autism, like, you know, like how horrible do you have to be to like say no to all, like, you know, helping autism, like, right. Like I don't know, like, or any cause, like, but so I was kind of happy, like, yeah, I did push forth a big campaign to help them out and say like, this is what you have to do. It worked, but that doesn't always work for everything.
Yeah. So, what kind of recommendations, ideas, or statements you would like to make regarding marketing budgets? I know a lot of individuals or small businesses, there's no real marketing capital. And I know you had talked about that your services are, you know, reasonably priced. But if someone has no idea what something like this will cost, aside from contacting you, what is a statement or maybe just something there needs? I feel like there's something that needs to be said about marketing budgets.
Well, I always say this, like, even for myself, like, I try to put forth like at least $150 a month just to basically for marketing, whether it's business cards, whether it's what it is, like, to up the ante for anyone, like, if you're looking just to market yourselves or anything, and you're not looking to go for a service, and you just want, like, and this is my little Easter egg to people. If you're going to market yourselves on Facebook and you want to spend as less as possible, then you got to work.
Yeah.
And the way you got to work is basically join every yard sale group, any group, community group on Facebook whatsoever. Basically plant yourselves there, get to know the people in those groups, and then afterwards go to those events that they're having, go to the yard sales, go to anything like that, hand out your business cards, be a member of that community, because in the end, it's that grassroots type of thing that work that will get you recognition and get you noticed. As long as you're not, like, you know, coming off like a sleazeball or anything like that, like, I think you have a better chance of doing that. And then this way your marketing won't be, in the future, won't be as expensive on Facebook or anything like that, because now you have a bunch of groups who recognize you and now will refer you as word of mouth.
All right. So last, I guess the last thing is what do you have to say about kids and marketing? Because and the reason why I say this, I just thought of like right now, my son has like this candy sale or whatever going in at school or whatever, and they're raising money and this is Girl Scout time right now. Or every supermarket you go to, there's Girl Scouts. And what's the benefit you think for the kids to have exposure to this kind of selling and marketing themselves and getting that experience?
I think, I mean, part of the, like, you know, kids selling Girl Scouts and anything, like, I think you have to have that good parental supervision, number one, and, like, you know, the want to help your children as well in doing so and give them, like, advice and so forth. You have to have the knack, because if they see that you're excited about it, they'll be excited about it.
Yeah.
And if they're excited about it more than you are, match their enthusiasm, because, like, there's nothing worse than, like, having a kid, like, feel like, you know, oh, well, they don't want to do it. So, like, and that puts them down.
Yeah.
Also, location. I mean, I would definitely think, it, like, you know, for me, like, when I see Girl Scouts outside of a supermarket, like, all right, I'm already getting hit up by the baseball like kids. I'm getting hit up by the soccer kids. Like,
yeah.
Now I got to buy cookies, too. I just bought some, like, you know, like, Toll House and all kinds of different ones up in the – but now, like, all right, cool. I'll help the calls, but – I mean, again, it's all about location. But, you know, for, like I said, the baseball kids, though, I always tell them, like, whether I was like, when I give them the money, I say, if you don't hit a home run, I'm coming back for this. Or if you don't score a goal, I'm coming back for this.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
The best I remember, we went out selling M&Ms for church. Yeah. We went to the one house, and the lady goes, no, I already bought some. I'm like, from who? From where? We're the only ones in this block to go to this church. How did you buy some already? Like, yeah. You know, that's bullcrapping you. Like, you know, that's just so bad. It's horrible.
Nah, I'm good.
Or, like, when you take your kid's fundraiser to another office, like, I just bought some from, you know, Jane on the third floor. Like, what the heck, man?
Well, now they have, like, a no-selling rule. You can't even, like, sell can't. Well, certain companies. I know, like, both of my companies, you can't bring stuff.
See, I know at us, it's like, I buy from your kid, you buy from my kid. So it always goes back and forth. Like, I know the people to go to because they started, like, when I first started where I'm at now, it's like, I showed them the thing. And they're like, oh, yeah, we got kids. So, you know, we support this kind of stuff. So now it's like, now when their kids have stuff, I definitely have to buy something off them because it's like, it helps. Support it helps. Yeah, support them. They support me. So
you hand them, like, 8 candy sale tickets.
No, I'm not greedy. I just take one. I just take one.
Yeah, he's selling candy every week.
Yeah,
all year long.
There's no events even going on. X is selling M&Ms.
I was being nice. I said 5.
So I remember getting, you know, I remember saving up. It was for a Six Flags trip or Six Flags at Hershey Park. I forget, whatever. I was like in fifth or sixth grade.
You going with one of Hector's dates?
Yeah. That's where it's the Great Adventure. So I remember getting rejected and the feeling that I got, like I said, I was probably 10 years old and getting like pissed and saying like, no, I'm selling this entire box. I'm going to every door until the end. What was crazy, I was limited until for the time from after school to the time my mom and dad got home. Like, I wasn't allowed to sell, like, during dinner time, obviously, because we were dinner, or after, because that was, in my mom's eyes, that was too dark. Yeah. So I had from 3 to 4, basically, 3 to 4:15-ish, to 5, to sell, and that's why I was running, boom, knocking on door to door, boom. I sold the most in, like, my grade, it was, like, 6 boxes, and each box comes, like, 100 and something.
Oh,
each.
Wow.
So I raised, like, $600 or something just by myself.
Yeah.
And it was the experience itself was cool. I think I burned myself out because the following year I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But the experience that I got, there was something to be said about the rejection. So I think it's something that has to be said for the kids selling these kind of things, like brownies, where people are walking in the supermarket, staring them dead in the eye, and then just keep walking.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, you know, there are parents out there that are using their kids as leverage. To raise and like, oh, look how cute. You can't say no to this.
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, it teaches the kids like confidence. Like there are going to be people that are going to say no.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you have to accept it. You can't like sit there and argue and fight it or whatever. You just keep it moving. Go into the next person. And it just builds them up as like miniature business people. Like right there. They own that little business right there. That little box, that's their business. They're in charge of selling every piece of candy, so they got to do whatever it takes, how they have to market themselves, run up to every person or knock on every door. That's how you have to sell that box.
Yeah,
that's
true.
So it teaches you, like, teaches them.
Yeah, I mean, I took it as a challenge.
Yeah.
To me, it was just a challenge. I'm like, nah, screw that. I'm selling this box, man, whatever happens. I mean, talking about location, Joe, I remember, like, going home from work and on the boulevard, right at the boulevard, there's always guys selling water or Gatorades or stuff, but they're fulfilling a need. And they bought these bottles of water. I have a case right here. We had a case of like 24 that we pay $3 or $4 for, and they're making $25. Well, they're making $20 on it, let's just say, because it's $4 to buy it, and they're selling all 24 for $1.
Yeah,
take off
people
the $4
selling outside the Philadelphia Zoo on the hot summer days when you know that you're about to pay $6 for a bottle of water inside. Those I respect those people.
I mean, yeah.
Clutch. Yep.
So opportunities out there. It's like you said, how you're marketing yourself. Are you fulfilling a really good need? And where's your location?
When I was about 10 years old, one of the fonder memories of my stepfather, I had a paper route that he went on every day with me, and when I was looking for more customers or anything like that, the weirdest thing, like, he taught me, he was all right, this house right here. I was like, okay, what about it? He was like, offer them the Sunday papers. I was like, why? He was like, because they look like they use coupons. I was like, how do you figure that? He was like, he goes look at their trash cans, look what they're throwing out. He was like, that stuff's expensive. I was like, okay. And so I would offer it, and it would work. I was like, this guy.
Wow. That's impressive.
He picked on the outside to see what they would to sell them on the newspaper, like, to figure them out.
Read their lifestyle through trash.
Raccoon
house. It was weird, because, like, and that was, like, how I learned, like, you know, like, some of the stuff from him, because there's just something, like, okay, like, you got to look at everything. Like, there's different things, and, like... Yeah. And it came out good, because, like, I used to use some of the things I learned from that, like, even though I got discouraged at first, and that's why he would give me, like, advice. And I was like, and so after that, I was like, okay, cool, let's do this. And I used some of those things I learned from him on him, so it worked out well.
Nice. Reversed it.
That's awesome.
Nice. All right, so cool. So let's close this episode out with quotes from Laura Fitton, Simon Sinek, and, of course, Seth Godin. The first one, focus on the core problem your business solves and put out lots of content and enthusiasm and ideas about how to solve that problem. Laura Fitton. Simon Sinek, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And the last of marketing genius, Seth Godin, our job is to connect to people, to interact with them in a way that leaves them better than we found them, more able to get them where they'd like to go. Nice. So genius input there.
Nice.
Yeah. And with that, Joe, we want to thank you for joining us.
I'd like to thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. So if folks want to contact you or get a hold of you and your services, what are your handles and websites?
www.dolcevitamediallc.com is the website. facebook.com/dolcevitamedia for obviously Facebook. Twitter is Dolce Vita LLC, and Instagram, Dolce Vita Media.
Nice. Perfect. So, getting noticed. In this episode, we had special guest Joey Biscotti, owner of Dolce Vita Media, a consulting business service. In this episode, we discussed branding, promotion, and the various levels of strategy needed to get noticed. We discussed the influence of social media and how to leverage it for marketing campaigns. We break down the marketing industry and the importance of always selling. We wrap the episode up with quotes from Laura Fitton, Simon Sinek, and Seth Godin. Thanks again for joining us. Guys, don't forget to visit the website, JimmyLeeVelez.com. Follow the blog. If you have any inquiries or questions you would like for us to answer on a future episode, just email us at info@JimmyLeeVelez.com. And on behalf of myself and the rest of the crew, we wish you massive success. And until next time, adios.
The Rotated Views podcast was produced for self-development purposes. Thank you for the love and support. We truly do hope you enjoyed the views.